Now, you know what? This reminds me of a story.
Okay.
You want to hear a story?
I love your stories, yes. man.
It's a geeky story.
Well,
but it's a special one.
What else did we expect?
Because, you know, I've been a geek for a very, very long time. Okay? I mean, honestly, first time I laid hands on a microcomputer was 1977. So it's been a long time. So back in the early days of modeming, when we had 300 baud modems.
When it was one step up from a Magna Doodle.
Sweet. Like 1985. I get a call from a friend of mine. And he says, Rich, I need some help. Come on down to the IBM building. I'm like, okay, well, you know, whatever's going on. He says, I got this device here and we can have it for free if we can get it out of the building. Now, what had he acquired? It was a Hewlett Packard 750 hard drive, 20 megabytes, about the size of a washing machine.
What okay? year?
It was, and it's 77. Literally from the 1970s. This was an ancient drive and it was basically junk as far as the IBM guys were concerned. And we could have it if we could get it out of there, which, and the reason this was difficult is the thing weighed about 400 pounds. 20 megabyte hard drive.
Wow. Amazing.
So we round up a few friends. We haul the thing back to Steve's place. We get it up. He's in the attic above in his parents' place, right? I mean, you know, teenagers at this point.
Right.
And he decides he's going to hook it up to his 300 baud BBS. Now it's running on an Apple II. He wrote it himself and he's got to somehow get it connected up to this machine. So he sets to work. And I'll give you this. Brilliant guy, right? Still is to this day. Very, very smart guy. Figures out a way to make this thing work. Calls the drive Goliath for obvious reasons. Now, a few things he learns along the way. One is the thing is so heavy, it cracks the wall plaster downstairs. So you have to position it over a structural member. The next thing he learned about it is it consumes about $200 a month in electricity. Now, he found this out when they got the bill. It ran on two-phase power, right? 220-volt power, like your dryer, not on a regular outlet. Of course, he didn't have two-phase power up in the attic, so he had to make his own.
He built
this little box out of two separate circuits to bridge the power together to power this thing.
Wow.
And sweet. It's a talented guy. So when he finally got it all up and running, I'm up in his room, we're talking, and somebody would log on to the BBS. This is back, you know, dial-up, right?
Yeah, I remember.
One phone line. So only one person at a time can log on the site and you write messages and stuff. And here was this 20 megabyte hard drive. And this is in an era of 160K floppies. Right. So 20 megabytes is a colossal amount of storage.
Dude, you could have taken over the world with that BBS and the 20 megabytes alone back then.
Oh, yeah. We had it all. We were out of control. It gets better. He eventually got it up to 50 megabytes by rewriting the encoding system onto the drive.
Wow.
Basically an on-the-fly compression solution.
Wow.
Isn't this cool, Karen? Wow. I love this story. Keep going.
Yeah. Wow.
Keep going, Richard.
Wow.
So, and the fun part, of course, is now that he couldn't leave it on all the time because it made so much, consumed so much power, you'd be sitting in his room chatting about something and somebody would log on to the website or the BBS, this is before websites, and would activate Goliath and the thing would take off, right? It's just like, bam, walls start to shake, the room's vibrating and it spins up to speed. And then it sort of goes, hum, and then you'd copy off what you wanted. You could hear the head seeking back and forth. Not this little pissant tick, 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 tick of your hard drives today. We're talking, bang, bang, bang. Like it's really reading something.
Richard, that's what they call the SysOp page.
Yeah. SysOps. SysOps, baby. I was a co-SysOp and I was proud of it. So a couple of years later of this happy time and we got the hard drive capacity up and all these good things are happening. I get a phone call. He says, you better get over here. So I hurry over. I head upstairs. And as I walk into the room, I take a sniff of the air. Smells like electronic death. That sort of resiny kind of smoky smell that makes you know something really bad has happened. And what had happened was this lamp, little clamping lamp on his desk, which we later named David, fell over and landed on that goofy power supply he'd built and shorted out the 5-volt supply in directly in from the AC outlet.
Ooh.
Ouch.
Oh, geez.
Set fire to some of the boards.
Oh, my God.
Burn this thing.
Oh, man.
Just fried it. And he's got the cover off, and there's blast marks in the cover. A couple of the boards have holes melted through them.
Yeah, that's
not
good.
And I'm like, so, what do you want to do? He says, we're going to fix it. I got the service manuals here. Now, this thing was so old, it didn't even use conventional chips, okay? Today, all our electronic chips are like CMOS chips.
Yep.
Back then, in the 80s, they were TTL chips. But this was older than this. These were DTL chips. And I'm like, buddy, we can't even buy these chips anymore. Like, they're nowhere. He says, I know where to find them.
Getting all
so
this, Karen?
We spent the next totally 3 months dumpster diving
so
in the back of old arcade repair shops because the old arcade video games used these chips. And one of us would have like a list of all the parts we were looking for, and the other guy would be digging through these old broken PC boards looking for these chips.
Awesome.
And then we'd drag them back and we'd desolder them, clean them up, and test them. Months at this, right? Trying to get this thing back together. He built new boards where they'd been burned, you know, rewired everything, tested each board individually till they're all working. He's
wow.
absolutely convinced after all this work, we have brought Goliath back to life. It's going to work again.
What year was it now?
Now it's like 1988.
Wow.
1989. So we had a couple, 3 years of happy times with Goliath working. Now we spent the better part of a 6 months to a year getting it up and running again. And admittedly, he did most of the work. I mean, he's really, like I said, a talented guy.
I guess.
Remarkable things. So I'm there the day he's going to turn it on. He's ready. He's going to try it. So he powers it up. Now, this is a big hard drive, right?
Yeah.
The actual disk platters are 18 inches across. They're huge, and they're in a caddy. You can remove them. And there's like eight of them in the caddy. So everything's locked up. He fires the thing over. The big motor kicks over. Boom! The walls start to shake, and it hums, and it finally spins up to speed. And I remember very clearly seeing the head latch release, and the head's just ripped across the length of the disc and smack into the bumper at the end, and the heads on the arms snap off and start pinging around inside this drive caddy, spinning at 1,500 RPM. Just and he yanks the plug out, and it spins back down.
That's not normal operation, right?
No, that's bad.
Yeah, okay.
And I say to him, dude, head crash.
Yeah, that's not good.
Serious head. There are divots out of the platters. Like, this isn't good. And so I say to him, and that's now months later, I say the same thing. So what do we do now? And he goes, we got the bastard. So I go over to the other side of the room, start making some phone calls, tell people Goliath isn't coming back up. Because everybody had data and stuff stuffed on this huge drive, and they wanted it back. And it's like, nah, we ain't getting it back. And Steve's, so I'm making one call after that. And Steve's just ripping away. He's yanking parts out, pulls the disc platters out, separates them, makes the world's most dangerous Frisbees. Right? They're aluminum discs, 18 inches across, coated in rust.
Ouch.
Don't catch them. It's a mistake. All of a sudden, it's good. A good hour's gone by, right?
This is awesome, man.
He goes, holy crap. I'm like, what? He goes, you're not going to believe this. And I look over. This thing's the size of a dishwasher or a washing machine. It's huge, right? He is bent completely over. I can barely just see his legs. He's in the machine, digging around. I'm like, what are you doing? He says, you're not going to believe this. He comes up, and do you remember the old slot cars? Remember the little slot cars and how they had those
yeah.
solid magnets, little curved U-shaped
yep.
magnets?
Right.
Exactly like that, only a 60-pound version of it.
Oh, Jesus.
It's huge. He Woo. Comes up with it. And it grabs at the casing that has just been pulled out of, drops out of his hand, hits the ground, shatters into 100 pieces, which go flying all over the room, sticking to every metal object in the room. There's bits of magnet everywhere. This is why this thing was so heavy, right? The main spindle that spun the whole thing had this solid core magnet on it. So
wow.
we go around trying to round up all the pieces, and we're laughing because this thing's hysterical. But, of course, there's another one in there. Right? There's always two. They work together. So the both of us haul the second one out, manage not to drop it. And he's like, well, now what do we do, Batman? You know, we got this magnet. He goes, we got to show Bob this magnet. Okay, let's go. So we go ripping downstairs. Well, as we go by his monitor, the screen
yes.
image is yanked off of it. The magnet bent the deflectors in the monitor
oh.
permanently. The screen is now a quarter of an inch wide along the left side. It's and he's like, and after we get Bob, we got to go to a video game shop and have some fun.
Oh,
so
man.
We go down to his car, and as we're headed for the car, we get too close to the car with the magnet, and it sticks to the side of the car. And we can't get it off. It's like, we could just drive with it here. It ain't ever coming off of there. We ended up getting a scissor jack, sliding it between the curve of the magnet and the car, and jacking it off of the car. Wrap the big magnet in a towel so now we can slide it off of things when it sticks to stuff.
Not if, when.
Yeah, because it's gonna. And then, yeah, we were deadly afraid of this magnet because it would destroy anything electronic that it got close to. It was like a portable EMP generator.
That's power.
That's awesome, man.
Well, that is the end of Goliath. And I'm telling you, that magnet was more powerful than this $30,000 piece of crap.
And it was free.
You should have thought about selling that for $30,000.
That's right.
If I'd only known.
Catch an hour of Freaky Geek Speak every week at mondays.pwop.com. Mondays, what Sunday threw up.